I'm Duarte Geraldino in for Tanzina Vega. With coronavirus making us anxious here on Earth, let's focus for a minute on outer space. For the first time in 4 years, NASA is taking applications for astronauts. New astronauts are likely to be part of future expeditions to the moon and Mars. Competition is expected to be stiff. During the last round, NASA only accepted 12 people out of more than 18,000 applications. Women are a big piece of NASA's future. Last month, NASA astronaut Christina Koch returned to Earth after 328 days in space. Hers was the longest single space flight in history by a woman. Now, Katie Coleman is a former astronaut with NASA. She's here to explain what it takes to go into space. Katie, thanks for coming on the show.
Well, thanks. It's a great subject. I'm so excited about the new selection.
Also with us is Mary Robinette Kowal. She wrote the Lady Astronaut series. She's also a science fiction writer. As part of her writing, Mary Robinette has done extensive research on the world of astronauts and how gender specifically plays a role in making it to NASA and succeeding there. Mary Robinette, thank you so much for being here on the show.
I'm delighted to be here.
So, Katie, we start with you. Give us the basics here. What does it take to actually be an astronaut at NASA?
Well, I'm going to start by saying less than you think. You know, it's so many people, so many more people are qualified than apply. And basically, you need right now a master's degree in a STEM field or the equivalent plus some experience in your field. And there's so many people that have actually those qualifications that don't apply. And amongst them, I'm going to say a lot of women and minorities. And so I'm really so happy that you're talking about it on your program so that maybe we can get the word out that basically space is for everyone. And I'll say, wow, space is for women.
The first time you looked at Earth from outer space, what was it like?
The biggest thing, I think, is that you just think that that's something other people are going to see, not you. And to realize that you're really in that place, for me, in the space shuttle, looking down, seeing the Earth go by, and also realizing that it's our whole place. I mean, everyone is here. And even before, you know, the troubles that we have, particularly now with coronavirus, where people are suddenly working together who hadn't expected to, it was always very clear to me that if people could only realize that they're all in the same place and they're all from the same place, we could solve anything.
So what type of unique challenges do women face in applying?
First of all, realizing that their names and their qualifications belong on those applications and that they would be amazing astronauts. And actually, I would sort of throw it to Mary Robinette in that I think part of the reason that doesn't happen enough, that qualified women and minorities don't apply, is that they don't necessarily see themselves in those roles. And part of that is because whenever they watch TV or advertisements or read books, they seldom see themselves in those roles.
Mary, how are you countering that?
I think that she's absolutely right. We're starting to see that shift. Films like Hidden Figures reminded people that women have been involved, especially African-American women, have been involved with the space program since very, very early on. But a lot of the early science fiction was written by men for men. You've got characters like Wilma Deering in Buck Rogers. And it's not until later that you start to have women that are in leadership roles. And I think that's one of the things that happens with women. We hear this in a lot of different fields, that we tend to self-select ourselves out, even when we're qualified. But the other aspect of it is that when you're thinking about the women who are entering the field now, the average age of a woman entering NASA as an astronaut, or the average age of an astronaut, is about 38. And when you think about the way culture was leading up to that point, and all of the barriers that were in place 20 years ago, when women were entering the various STEM fields, you see the number of different things that kind of stood between them and getting the job experience they needed to be qualified now. So one of the things that I can do as a science fiction writer and other people in media can do is to try to increase that representation, to remind women that these are options, and also to train men and the other people in the workplace around them that these are options that you don't have to go with this one particular image in your head. Katie has this great story about her son seeing a picture of an astronaut that I think is completely on point about this.
Katie, can you share that story briefly?
Well, my son, who's now 19, actually, and I think asleep. But anyways, it was when he was about 4, and there was a giant cutout. I was at some event, and he came with me, and there was a giant cutout of a person in a spacesuit. And it's really kind of hard to see that who that person is. And he says, "Mommy, is that you?" I said, "No, that one's not me." And he goes, "Well, then, if it's not you, whose mommy is it?"
I love it.
He grew up in a different world.
So, Mary Aubinette, are there any particular strengths that women bring to the field?
So it's an interesting question. There's a couple of different areas historically that women have tested better than men. We tend to, I say we, even though I am not actually qualified in any way, shape, or form to be an astronaut because I am not in the STEM fields, but we tolerate higher Gs than men do. Some of that has to do simply with stature, but it is a very useful thing when launching. The other thing that's been interesting historically is that women do much better on stress tests. When the Mercury 13, which were the first women lady astronaut trainees, were going through the same Mercury tests that the men did, they performed on the stress tests magnitudes better than the men. One example is they had sensory deprivation, and the record for a man was, I think, 3 hours. They had to stop the test after 9 hours because she had just fallen asleep.
Wait a minute. She fell asleep after 9 hours?
She was just like, "Oh, sensory deprivation. This is nice." One of them was the mother of 8, and I kind of imagine that in her head she's like, "So when is this test going to start?"
Katie, briefly, what excites you most about NASA's future?
It's the fact that we are absolutely exploring further. I mean, going back to the moon, going on to Mars. I mean, this is our place. I mean, one thing I learned from going to space is that I always thought space was somewhere else, but actually it belongs to all of us. And there's no question that people, and we have to bring all of them, really, all the different kinds of people, they are the ones and we are the ones that will explore. It all starts with that application, and I can only beg everyone who dreams of going and being part of it, fill out that application, celebrate who you are.
Katie Coleman is a former NASA astronaut, and Mary Aubinette Kowal is a science fiction writer and the author of the Lady Astronaut series. Thank you so much for joining and inspiring us.
On Notes from America, we have conversations with people across the country about how we can truly become the nation that we claim to be. Each week, we talk about race, our politics, education, relationships, usually all of them, because everything's connected. And you, our listeners, are at the center of those conversations. I'm Kai Wright. Join me on Notes from America, wherever you get your podcasts.